Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Will I White is a stand-up comedian and host of the podcast You Must Be Joking. He's starring in a multi-award winning play, The Examination, which explores mental health and human rights in the prison system. And Willa joins me in studio now. You're very welcome.
Thank you, Claire. Thanks very much for having me in.
So our paths crossed and you were telling me about this play. It's written and directed by a theatre company called Broken Talkers. Two lads that I actually went to college with.
Yeah, I don't believe in coincidence. I believe in fate. I believe that the night I went in that you were interviewing Pat Dively in the Sugar Club, which I said to you was an amazing interview. I have to say you're very, very good at your craft. And I just met and we were talking and I was telling you about the play and kind of a little bit about my past. And here I am, you know, I'm here at the minute and we're going to talk about it.
I have my tickets for the play, so let's talk about it, because this was a big collaboration. They had already been in Phelim and Gary, two prisons, to interview people in there when you met.
Yeah, that's right. They had been in doing research for about 18 months. And they spoke mainly to life serving prisoners. And the only thing you get life for in this country is murder. So most of all the lads they were speaking to were lads that had been in prison for murdering somebody. And just to get their views on mental health and the welfare and what's actually still going on in the prison system at the moment, that most people that probably walk by Mountjoy or the Docus Centre on the North Circular Road or Weefield Prison or the Midlands or Castlereagh, or no matter where that prison might be near you, don't really give it a second's thought. You know, people walk by with that assumption, you know, Asher, they're in there, they're, you know, they're animals or whatever it might be. But it's a place, and from my experience, that it doesn't matter what's in there with you, your freedom, the people that you love, is taken away from you. And that in itself is the punishment for your crimes. Like, you know, some people, in my opinion, for smaller misdemeanor stuff, I don't think should be in there. I would love the government to devise a way that especially first-time offenders can be detoured from going into prison and having that a criminal record on your resume. I don't think, you know, should be. If there's another way, I'd love a way to be devised that it doesn't happen like that. That maybe, you know, whether it's community service or whether it might be, you know, paying a fine or doing something or putting something back into the community. But it's just, it's a place where people I don't think a lot about. And the play gives people the opportunity to have a look at what it's like from both sides of the coin. Because Gary is an ex-victim of crime who was mugged in London a good few years ago. And myself, from my past, I'm an ex-criminal. So Gary gets to tell his part of what it was like for him and the impact that the crime had on him. And I talk about prison, what it was like for me and the impact that prison had on my life. So it's you know, it's for the victim and also for the criminal. And I empathise and sympathise with any victim of crime. And I feel for them. And people, unfortunately, are victims of crime. Once there's drugs, first and foremost, I find in society, and people need to go out and get drugs, whether they're burgling houses, you know, with people in them, whether they're robbing people on the streets. There's always going to be casualties of crime. I suppose, fortunate enough for me, I never went down that route, and I'm not kind of glamorising it and saying, oh, sure, no one was impacted by my crime. I never physically hurt anyone or anything like that, but still what I done landed me in prison. So it doesn't really make a difference. You know, prison is there as they say, it does exactly what it says in the tin.
And I was saying to you as we were walking towards the studio, I've had you in my ears the last couple of days ahead of this conversation. So I was listening to you on the Talking Bollocks podcast where you tell your whole story. And I was struck by what you said about your dad, who you described as a violent man when you were a child growing up, a man who would drink and that you'd be fearful of coming home. But you said he was a man doing the best he could based on the way he'd been brought up. And is that how we need to start thinking about people that end up in prison, asking why it happened, why they committed a crime, what was missing in their life, and look to rehabilitate and support them rather than just punish?
Definitely, Claire, 100%. I mean, everyone that's in behind the walls of the Irish prison system at the moment has a story. I find that from myself, personally speaking, I suffered with childhood trauma physical and mental childhood trauma. Others suffered with sexual abuse as kids. A lot of people that are in the system have suffered, in my opinion, with a trauma or an event in their lives that has caused them to go down the road that they've went down. Now, there is a small minority of people that just like a bit of madness and just run with the wrong crowd and are brought up in really nice homes, and there's no reasons there whatsoever to go down the road that they do. But they're few and far between. You know, a lot of the people and the men that I would have been locked up with were suffering from trauma of one form or another. You know, whether it was at home or whether it was something that happened outside the home. So we definitely need to look at why the individual is ending up in these places. We definitely need to look at why it's a revolving door for so many people. Rehabilitation, I say it very, very loosely. I don't think that there's enough being done in the Irish prison system at the moment for prisoners. I think that they're out-resourced, the prison officers, the people in the school, the doctors, the medics, whatever makes the cogs and the wheel go around in any prison, the dynamics of it, they haven't got the resources to do what they're doing. Then you've got the issue of overcrowding. I mean, you put 3 times more the population of a prison population, if it's meant to hold 300 people and there's 900 people there, it's going to breed resentment, it's going to breed anger, it's going to breed violence, and that's what's going to happen. Half the stuff that happens in prisons at the moment, there wouldn't be enough room in the Irish papers for them. You know, the place is at boiling point. The staff, the governors and the people that are there are trying to do the best with what they can. But I mean, my thing is, and I'm been gone to prison since the 90s, and the issues are still the same. And it's like that saying, if nothing changes, nothing changes. And nothing has changed. They've done nothing. You know, people say, what have we built more? I think they definitely need another prison. You know, and yet, come here, it'll be filled. But even if it's not, the places are there for people to, you know, to do their prison time as best as they can and not get involved in the altercations that they really shouldn't get involved in. When people are all crammed in together, there's always going to be a recipe for disaster. Like, that's my opinion.
We're talking a lot more now about victim blaming and victim shaming. And often the question is asked, why are we putting our focus on how the victim behaved rather than the perpetrator of the crime? And I've been thinking a lot about that. And I think often it's because we don't want the backstory. We don't want necessarily to give any kind of empathy to that potentially dark situation, particularly in the areas of abuse or sexual violence. We don't want to think that perhaps there was something in somebody's past that led them to behave in that way that may have needed better support, because it seems like then we're not giving the emphasis to the support that the victim now needs. Whereas if we shifted focus and gave it in both areas, we would be able to give support so that people did not continue with these crimes.
Yeah, you know, and it's crazy that you just said that there, because I never really thought about it like that, you know, because the perpetrator or the person that has committed the crime just kind of seems, and I don't mean to say like gets off scot-free, obviously there is consequences, but it all seems to be the survivor, what if this and what if that. I mean, when you're caught up in something like that, like, nobody knows, you know, what to do, how to deal with it. Some people think it's the norm. Other people know it's not, but they're afraid for the safety.
Yeah, and until we start removing that stigma and giving support in those areas and stop brushing those things under the carpet, the more they're going to continue. Look, it's a huge conversation that you can't be fully responsible for, Willa, or the play cannot cover. But it is important, I think, and you've mentioned it already, that you do cover both sides, the victim and the person within the prison system.
Definitely, it's very thought-provoking. Like, it's, and I'm not looking for people to come and see this play and side with me. That's what it's not about. And we're not looking for people to come and side with Gary. We're looking for people to come and sit on the fence and have a look at both sides of it, and understand what it's like from the prisoner's point of view, and obviously understand what it's like from the survivor / victim's point of view as well, and the stuff in between, the dynamics of what goes on in a prison, why people act the way that they do, the addiction, the, you know, the mental illness and everything that comes with that. And it's just a boiling pot of negativity and hatred, I suppose, a lot of the time, because these places are just not designed to facilitate the needs of the prisoner at the moment. Like, as I said earlier, there is not enough resources. I mean, it's still going to continue and it's still going to be the same in 20 years' time if they don't get the resources and they don't get the money to facilitate the prisoners and the staff as well that are in there.
Yeah, you described it in one of the interviews I was reading as carnage, just carnage, and how anybody's expected to come back and re-enter society for the benefit of society. Because it sounds like you're constantly giving sympathy to somebody who committed a crime. But what you're really trying to do is make sure that we can all live as harmoniously as possible and give people the support they need. Victims, survivors, number one, but also to make sure that somebody doesn't commit a crime again. That keeps everybody safe. So you go back into prisons now to show that you can turn your life around, that there is hope.
But I mean, I never had anyone when I was in prison to come in who had been where I had been, who'd made the same mistakes, who, like a lot of them young teenagers, you know, have the image, the ego, the bravado, you know, all this stuff that don't talk about stuff, bottle everything up, probably trauma, as I spoke about earlier on, and their only way to deal with it is through violence or through crime or seeking acceptance from other people because they're starved of love and affection at home. And that was me as well. It's like when I was a kid growing up, my mother and father never gave me any love and affection. Two ingredients that any child that's brought into the world 100% deserves. And these young lads are up here, some of them in for horrific crimes, which is immaterial to me. I don't care whether they're in there for stealing something or whether they've done something that I really actually, it's immaterial to me what they've done. So I tell them about what it was like for me growing up, and I tell them they can change, that this can be the last time that they have to come into an institution, that there is a life outside of crime and of selling drugs and all this sort of stuff. Like, and I find a lot of times that when I go in and do stuff like that, whether it's a young offenders institution, whether it's Mountjoy Prison, whether it's Weefield, I get a lot more out of it probably than what they get out of it. I get a belt of gratitude knowing when I'm sitting there, when I'm talking, telling them about my own experience, that, oh yeah, I'm going to be leaving the building in probably an hour's time. And these, you know, and I'm not going to say poor unfortunates or anything like that. They're people that have done things that you end up going to prison for. But just to let them know that there is a way out, there is an exit door. I hope we can ignite a small little flicker of hope in somebody to go, do you know what? If he can do it, if he's been a fella that's been homeless on the streets, been in psychiatric hospitals, been in prison, you know, for years over time, and been on methadone clinics and all this horrible, horrible stuff that has been the pathway in my life to get me to the destination where I am at the moment, hopefully it'll do something for them. I mean, if it just even changed one out of hundreds of people that I've spoke to, I'd feel really, really proud, like, you know.
Yeah, as you should. How does comedy and humour feature when you're telling these stories? It always really amazes me how particularly the Irish are very good at finding humour in the darkest of things. I mean, the world is tough to look at right now. When you walk into a room like that, will you say something funny to get them on board, to relax people? Do you think that's an important part of having these conversations?
100%. I think, especially speaking to people, like I talked earlier, in prisons and institutions, humour has always worked for me through life, even through the darkest times. Even when I was strung out and I was using, I was always even behind the facade of the heartache and everything else that was going on, I was always able to have a bit of wit and kind of crack a joke, where really I'd nothing to joke about or laugh about, you know, but it always benefited me. I was never violent. I was never one of these fellas that, you know, was in fights or anything like that. If anything, I would shy away from anything like that. So my only thing that I had going for me that I was good cracking, I was a bit of laugh. Like, so a lot of lads that had been, you know, selling drugs or had drugs that I went, bring him with us, we'll get a bit of crack, pardon the pun. Like, so that's what I do. And I find definitely what you talked about as well, Claire, that there is there is laughter in the tragedies of life. You know, we can take the funny stuff out of a lot of the dark stuff that has happened. And I do that in me stand-up. But people just get lost along the road. The drugs take over. But when you do peel back the layers and a lot of people get clean, there's actually a really good person underneath. And the gorilla suit that I wear in the play, and throughout the play, I take pieces of the gorilla suit off, is to show people that people might look at us as animals, but underneath the animal, there's actually a person. There's someone's son, there's someone's daughter, there's someone's father, there's someone's brother. We all belong to somebody, and, you know, we just got lost along the road of life somewhere and, you know, and end up in these places until we address the past and what's happened with us, which I done and still do. I'm not fixed by any stretch of the imagination. I still see a psychiatrist every now and again. I speak to people. I'm damaged, but I know how to deal with it. I know how to get on with life. I know, you know, that drink or drugs is not the solution to my problem anymore. If I pick up a drink or a drug, it's going to be like throwing petrol onto a fire. It's going to get worse. So life is manageable. It's bearable. Come here. You still get stuff that trip you up and you get annoyed about stuff and you do things sometimes that you shouldn't do and you say things that you shouldn't do. You know, I know to go back and right me wrongs and apologise and just kind of move on with life, you know.
Well, I don't believe in coincidence either. I'm really glad that our paths crossed. And I want to end on this because in something I was listening to you saying, you said that number 29 has been very significant in your life.
Yeah, number 29, yeah. It's mad, yeah. Even I was driving down the road the other day and I looked out the door and number 29 was on it. So 29 has always been kind of relevant. So I was 29 when I eventually gave up drugs. So please God, on the 4th of April, I'll be 24 years without a drink or a drug, which is a really big achievement. And I've got to give myself a pat on the back for that, you know. 29, I came into recovery at 29. The cell I was in before I got out was number 29. And the house that I bought up in Laytown was number 29.
And have you ever looked it up, the significance of the number 29?
No, have you?
I did.
Said it to me.
I did. The number 29 in numerology, if you believe in it, whatever. But this is good. Wait till you hear. It's usually associated with growth, new beginnings and change.
Wow. Yeah, I've never looked it up, but it is. Yeah.
Growth and change.
Yeah, well, that's me. Definitely, yeah. Without a shadow of a doubt, yeah.
Well, I have my tickets. I thought I'd better support the lads I went to college with. Two lovely lads, Phelan and Gary. Really looking forward to seeing you on stage. It's called The Examination by Broken Talkers featuring Willa White. 17th, 18th and 19th of April at the Ambassador Theatre in Dublin, and tickets are available at Ticketmaster. You can find out more about Willa at Willa White Comedy on Instagram. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks very much for having me in.
And if you've been affected by anything mentioned in that interview, the Samaritans are open 24/7. You can call them on 116 123. That's 116 123.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.